we have here. Thank you. I want to thank everyone for coming. I appreciate it. Keeps me busy. Baruch Hashem. It's a sign of a connection to the yeshiva, which is also very nice. Baruch Hashem, we appreciate that. I have 30 questions here, which I don't think I'm going to get to. But I want to give an introduction to all the questions. When I was, I think my first year in Beis Medrash, so that means I was around 17, 18, I don't remember. It's a little while ago. Not allowed to say how long ago, but a little while ago. So there was a person, an older bacher, I think he was still single. He was considered one of the chashuvim of the yeshiva. He was a very chashuv fellow. His name was Svi Novik, a chashuv fellow. And he gave me, he was talking to me, and he gave me a little advice. And the advice that he gave me is somewhat relevant to this, to today. He basically told me, he basically told me as follows, that when people ask a question, there's more than one answer to every question. Example, a person asks you for direction. How do I go? I want to go to China. How do I get there? You can go by airplane. You can go by boat. You can go via the Atlantic Ocean. You can go the Pacific Ocean. There's more than one answer to a question. Very often, they're both right. So what answer are you supposed to give? The answer is you have to give the answer that the listener is going to be happy with, because certain answers resonate with the listener and certain answers don't. And the goal of what he was telling me is you don't give the answer that you want to give. You have to give the answer that the listener wants to hear, because your purpose is to answer the listener. So you got to give an answer that resonates with him. So he was telling me a very good answer is that when you talk to people and give them advice, you have to look at them. And not just look at them because people are impressed, they feel more comfortable when there's eye contact, but you have to watch very carefully their body expressions and their facial expressions. Because if you start giving an answer that doesn't resonate, they'll be very polite and they'll listen, but there'll be a certain flicker of disappointment in their face. Oh, he didn't understand me. Oh, I knew I shouldn't have asked him that question. On the other hand, if you give him an answer that he likes, you'll see a flicker of excitement in his face. So you have to watch the body language to see is my answer resonating with him or not? If you get start to answer, it might be the right answer, and it's the answer that I like to the question. But if you see from his facial expressions that it's not getting to him, then he said you've got to very quickly switch to the second answer. Could be a completely different answer. You go very quickly. You say, "Oh, this," and there's also another answer. Let me go to the other answer. You know, you go. You can sometimes just without even making it so obvious that you're giving another answer. And that's what he said. That was Svi Novik, a very smart fellow. And so the problem is with this Zoom is that I do not think I can go ahead and see facial expressions. So I don't know how we do this. I would suggest, I don't know, maybe Nothing Yashar is going to be have to check. I think maybe, should we take a break after every question and hear some, if people have something to say, take a three minute interim and then go on to the next question. Okay. Sure. Anyway, I think that's a good way of doing it. Okay, anyway, there's a long question here, and then there's a short question. Both are somewhat similar, which I guess I would start with because it's in Yoni Dioma. Here's the question I'll read. There are people who want to make a big public thank you Hashem event. They call up a big rabbi to speak. He said, it's beautiful to publicly thank Hashem, but not while we have brothers or sisters suffering. What does Rebbe think? It will be a tremendous kiddush Hashem. We'll give a tremendous chumay people. It's true that there'll be people who will be so hurt because they are currently suffering, but they should also thank Hashem. Or do we say, don't serve Hashem someone else's expense? In other words, basically the question is it appropriate now to make a thank you Hashem event when there are people suffering and their reaction will be, it'll make them hurt more? A similar question, maybe a more broader question, was someone asked, just in general, how does one feel simcha to today when there's so much suffering? You know, people say, supposedly, if there is Hashem b'simcha, supposed to have simcha in life, how does one feel simcha when there are so many people suffering in the world? Okay, so I'd like to relate to those two questions. They're somewhat similar. The first question is, how do you get all together? Forget about the now. And generally speaking, how does one have simcha? So one of the things that I remember I heard very much from Rav Zuckerman, he made a very strong point that 99.9% of the people in the world are not really happy. Or you're not talking about they're not, you know, Rabbi Schaefer has one of his books, Stop Surviving and Start Living. Now, most people are surviving. They're, you know, okay, they make it through the week. I made it through the day. I made it through the year. You know, they're living for the vacation. They're living till the Shabbos. But they're not really enjoying life. When Zuckerman told a mashal, I think it's, I don't even know if it's a Jewish mashal, but he told the mashal of a king who got sick, and the doctors told him that in order to be cured, he has to put on the shirt of a happy person. So he called his prime minister, says, I need your shirt. He says, why? Because I need the shirt of a happy person. And the guy said, well, I'll tell you the truth, I'm not really happy. And then he calls all his ministers, and they all say, well, we're not really happy. And he calls all the rich people in the country, and they all say they're not really happy. And then they make a search for a truly happy person through the whole country. And finally, on top of some mountain, they find a person. They say, are you happy? And he says, yes. Are you really happy? Yes, I'm so happy. And they say, great, we need your shirt. And he says, I don't own a shirt. That was the Zuckerman, the famous mashal. But what the point of that mashal is really two points, is that one, most people in the world are not truly happy. And two, is in that mashal, how do you become really happy? In that case, is a person who's not machshav gashmius at all would be happy, because the reason why most people are not happy is because yesh lo mana rotzo masayim. Person has 100, he wants 200. You're never satisfied what you have. So the eighth of being happy is that I don't have a shirt. I don't care about a shirt. I don't need a shirt. I don't want a mana. I'm not interested. I'm a hermit living in the woods. So that is but I don't think that is, you know, even though that is the, you know, I don't think Zuckerman was bringing this story for that second message. But the Maisa, I don't think from the Svarim that is the Hashkavas Atar. It might be true that a person who these all Olam Hazeh could theoretically be happy, but that's not what we believe Hashem wants us to do. I believe as a Torah Avram that there's the two ways of becoming happy. You can be, you know, even though Chazal say Yesh lo mana rotzo masayim, there's two ways to solve that problem. Either you can be not interested in a mana, like in this mashal, the hermit living in the woods, he doesn't need Olam Hazeh. Or you could realize that I have infinite wealth. If I am infinite wealth, then you can't say Yesh lo mana rotzo masayim. I have everything, more than everything. He says it's the midah, a person has to develop an appreciation for what we have, to appreciate that what we have is infinite. We have so much bracha. Just the fact that you're alive, the fact that the sun is shining. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter says, if not for people being jealous of other people, they would be just so happy that they have the sun, they have the trees, they have the grass. But since other people have it too, they don't appreciate it because I have to be better than everyone else. But that's a midah ra. But just and a person without that midah ra, that I need to be better, there's so much in life to be happy about, infinite levels, that we wouldn't be Yesh lo mana rotzo masayim, because we have masayim, we have everything, we have so much. The Maisa, especially in the last years, there's a famous Rav Achanan Wasserman, which we said many times, that says that the world runs as far in levels of tkufas, which means that there's the Gra, it's in the Siddur Gra, says, Abba Rabba Aptonu Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem gave us a great deal of love. He took us out of Mitzrayim. Chemla means compassion, mercy, Gedolah V'Yaseira. He says that after Hashem punished us for the Chayta Ego, He gave us even more love. He gave us a Mishkan. So the Gra says, whenever there's a punishment, after the punishment, there's more love. The most chesed you get from Hashem is after the punishment. Because he says that's teva of the world. After you punish, you have to prove that you still love the person. So a parent, after he punishes his child, will give his child more love. So the world, Rabbi Chanan says, runs in a pattern that after the biggest saris, always come the biggest bracha. A very fascinating Rabbi Chanan. So we definitely been living in a period of incredible, incredible bracha. You know, you read Svarim, you read the introduction Svarim, that the tsaris that you read and these people write in their hakdamas, almost every hakdama of a sefer I write, read about the mechaber writes about lulei tarascha shashua, if so many tsaris, my wife died, my kids died, well, my parnasa got destroyed, I was sick. I remember reading a sefer in America, it was printed in the 1900s. The person wrote a question. It was the shayla of the sefer. Why do we celebrate Pesach? America in the 1910s is worse than Mitzrayim. The sweatshops in America are worse than Mitzrayim. So why should we celebrate Pesach? The answer was because we celebrate Pesach that it's possible we can get out of them. We can get out of the sweatshops just like they got in Mitzrayim. So in general, the Bali Muslims say even when things are terrible, we have to realize that there's tremendous bracha. And surely, in our time, there is tremendous, tremendous bracha. So, answering the question, both questions, how can one be happy in a time like this? Is because even with all the tsaras, there's still tremendous, tremendous brachas. Even though Aleinu, someone who has someone who was nifter, still has tremendous brachas. You have to recognize the bracha, there are still brachas in the world. And yeah, it doesn't mean there isn't avedis, but there's simcha with the avedis. There's a famous Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that Yirmiyahu HaNavi wrote Eicha. He wrote Eicha, Beruach HaKodesh. Says he was crying when he wrote Eicha. But he says, but how could he write it, Beruach HaKodesh, Ein Nevuah Shara Edemitoch HaSimcha? So he said he had to have it bevas achas with the crying, writing eicha, Yirmiyahu Navi, he had to have a tremendous level of simcha. Otherwise, he could never be a Navi. That's a Chazon Ish. So that with all, even a person who lo aleinu is suffering, and is tremendous suffering, is obligated really to be simcha. Because I don't say it's easy, but that's what he's supposed to. He has to have to work on it. To appreciate the tremendous brachas. And especially the people that aren't suffering, the people like myself, who my biggest suffering is I'm locked in my house. Okay, big deal. You know, it's not such a big deal, even though I complain, but deep down I know it's not such a big deal. And the big deal is that I don't get my fancy food that I like. You know, I can't get my ice cream, can't get my whatever, you know. And Baruch Hashem, I have a freezer full of food. And Baruch Hashem, I have, you know, a health. And I have a house. And I have a yard. So just a minor inconvenience. So I'm saying, even the people that are suffering, they're alpitin. That's the chiyuv. There's a real chiyuv. Person has to be recognized as simcha, the kakaras atov, takash baruch hu, all the time. And especially the ruba of people that are not really suffering, we got to recognize the toe. We can't allow ourselves to go ahead and think that we're, oh, yeah, 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 life is so terrible. We have to, the pasuk in Eicha, that how can a person complain? It's enough that you're alive. Just that alone. Person has to be go ahead and appreciate. I always say the story that there's a, it's brought down in the Sefer Forgot his name. Rav Shapiro was the name of the sefer. I forgot. I have it here on the shelf. It's Rakshas Halev, I think. I'm not sure what was the sefer. And he brings out, I don't remember the name of the sefer, I'm sorry. But he said that that there was a person who came out the whole week. He barely ate and he barely slept. And he was walking around with so much simcha. So people asked him, how can you have so much simcha and how much energy? If you don't eat and you don't sleep, you can't have energy either. And he said, just every morning I make the bracha shalom asani goy, and it gives me so much simcha, it carries me through the whole day. What more do I need than shalom asani goy? Okay. Anyway, I think that is the answer to the question that we ourselves have to work on ourselves to appreciate what we have. Even a person who has tzaras has to appreciate what he has. Is it proper to go ahead and make these events? I don't know, but it should be done in a way. If it's done in a way when it's spoken out, then everybody, yes, there are people that are suffering, and we mishtatev in their tzar, and we realize their tzar, and they obviously have a right to have tzar, but even they have to appreciate the chesed Hashem, and it's a universal rule. I think that's a proper message that can be sent to everybody. If it's presented nicely, not to be disrespectful to people that are suffering and to say, everything's great, but to recognize, yes, we realize that for you people, there's tremendous sorrow. And if either a person is sick or a loved one is sick, it is a tremendous, tremendous sorrow. Can't take it away. We say the Yirmiyahu Navi was crying at the Korban. But there has to be, I'm not saying they can't have the sorrow, but there has to be a simcha together with the sorrow. And the two can coexist. You know, there's a halacha when a parent is nifter and they leave over a Yerusha, you make two brachas, Tova Meite, Reshachiona, and Dayan Emes. So the two argoshas can coexist. A person can coexist and feel a simcha and a sorrow at the same time. Okay, that will be the answer for your question. I mean, can I stop for a minute? Does anyone have anything to say? Did I get slugged up? Rabbi Schwartz, you want to demute everyone?
They can unmute themselves if they want.
They can unmute themselves. Okay, anyone else? Otherwise, I'll just go on. Okay. All right, let's go to an easy question. Is Musar the answer to all problems? No. It's an easy one. There is such a thing as people who need to go to a psychologist. That's not Musar. There is other things in life besides Musar. Musar solves certain, Rashiva used to say, there's certain realm of normal psychology, normal problems that we deal with, gaiva, taiva, and a certain level can deal with them with Musar. But certain other problems, not necessarily Musar is a salve for it. Obviously a person who thinks he's a chicken, you're not gonna solve that with Musar. You know, there are certain, but that's just an extreme, but there are certain, person who has there are different things that you need. There are other problems, and you have to sometimes go to a professional who knows how to deal with that problem. Just like you have to go sometimes to a doctor who has to give you physical medicine. There could be certain mental issues, that emotional issues, and you need someone who specializes in that issue. Even for taiva, there are people that could have extreme taiva problems, that it's not necessary that Musar is not enough to solve it. And even that, there are special systems. Musar, for a person who has, in the normal, run-of-the-mill, typical daily problems, usually Musar works for. You know, it's a typical problem of gaiva, typical problem of taiva, typical problem of atzlis, typical problem. But if there is something extreme, and many people, it's normal for many people to have extreme issues, then you have to do something sometimes a little more extreme. Okay, let me do a note from one of these short ones either. I find it easier today when I'm in a more comfortable clothing that are not appropriate for a base medrash. Is it okay to go to Shir and Nirvana Chavrusa like that? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's the Shayla and Halacha, just like to davening. If a guy would say, I'm more comfortable davening in my shorts, it's a Halacha. There's a Halacha of Hochel Nikra Sed Okecha. It's a pasuk in the Torah. But you have to prepare the Hasidim wear a garto before davening. As din of chacham, but we, the non Hasidim, don't wear a garto. But we also hold to that. You put on a hat, you put on a jacket. A guy would say, I'm more comfortable at home davening without my hat and jacket. You got to daven hat and jacket. Even no one's around, and there's no minyan, and there's no Rebbe screaming. That's Kavod HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a person has to build up the proper feeling for davening. It's a halacha. So learning the halacha of Hachom applies to learning too. It's brought down a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch that this pasuk of Hachom Nikra Sedokecha applies also for learning. And a person has to dress properly when he's learning. I'm pretty sure it's a halacha. It's a black and white halacha in Shulchan Aruch. I remember Rav Zeidu Epstein telling us that he was learning in Europe in a Beis Medrash. I think it was said in Vilna, but I don't remember for sure. And he rolled up his sleeves, and he said, not over the elbow, just rolled it up a little bit, halfway up his, halfway up. And he says a Baal Bus came over to him and said, that's pashnish, it's not proper to learn like that. he was trying to show us a difference between Europeaners and today. I think today, people wear short sleeves, and it's considered proper. I'm not saying anything wrong with short sleeve shirts. That's an accepted mode in America. But he was saying then in Europe, he just rolled up his sleeve a little bit and he got screamed at from a Baal Bus that, how can you go learn like that? So I even though it's easier to learn, I don't think it's proper. I think it's a lack of chashivas for Torah. And that's a halacha. You got to go ahead and dress appropriately. Let me just do one more quickly and then let's answer some questions again. Is it possible for us to reach a level, this is Messiah Yesharim, higher than Zrizas or Nikias? If not, should we still learn these Parakim nonetheless? A very good question. I heard Rabbi Moshe Chait ask that question. He answered it. He said that the Messiah Yesharim is one step built on the other. And he said that it's a pyramid, which means that you don't have to finish the bottom floor to build the second floor. You don't have to finish the second floor to build the third floor. So even if we haven't reached Shleimus in Zrizus, we can go on to Nikias. And even if we haven't finished Nikias in Shleimus, we can go on to the next Madrega. And even if we finish that Madrega, we can still go on to the next one. It just gets less and less. So we have to, the main work should be on the bottom floors because those are the ones that we can do much more of. We can do much more of Zahiris and much more of Zrizas. But a little bit, we can do all the other Madragas. Just keeps on getting less and less as a pyramid. And therefore, Rabbi Chait used to say, I think he quoted it from one of the Rashivas in Hebron. I don't remember which one. Probably Rav Chatzkel Sarna, who wrote a parish from the Seas Yesharim. I assume that's who he quoted from. But that we should read the entire Messias Yesharim. Not necessarily all the time. Maybe your main work should be on first brachim, because those are what's most nogea. And the earlier the parak, the more time you spend on it, because that's the most nogea to you. But a little bit, there's a concept of a little bit. Let's say, for example, there's a chassidus, Messiah Yesharim, talked about doing Nachas Ruach Lebayre. So that's obviously, Rabbi Yisrael said, we do mitzvahs mostly for Schar V'Einesh. That's where we're holding. But a little bit, you have to have the thought that, I should also do Nachas Ruach Lebayre. Rav, it was a big gadol, used to say, was his name was Rav. His name was Rabbi Yoakum. He used to say that a person should think like this. I'm learning all day for his car. Now, what would happen if in the middle of Seder, I would get a message that, you know, that the computer in Shemayim is overloaded, and for the next 5 minutes, you're not going to get any schar because the computer is overloaded. They can't register. After 5 minutes, the schar will come back on. So really, if you're only interested in schar, you could take a 5 minute break and, you know, come back in 5 minutes and you'll get the exact same schar. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent a special request that he would appreciate it if you continue learning. You're learning it. So he said, you wouldn't continue learning. You're learning anyway. You're basically learning all Seder. You're learning for this car. So another 5 minutes for Hanasas Nachas Ruach HaBayri you can't handle. So what he was trying to say is that it's not that we're totally out of the realm of Lasos Nachas Ruach HaBayri. We're not ready maybe to dedicate our whole lives only for Lasos Nachas Ruach HaBayri. If there was no car, I don't think most of us would be ready to spend our whole day and night, just for Nachas Ruach HaBayri. We're too selfish. But 5 minutes, we can do Nachas Ruach HaBayri. And maybe 10 minutes. And if even it's 5 minutes, when is that? Every 5 minutes could be that 5 minutes. So he was saying that you can always have a little bit of, you know, it's like a secondary kavana. Once I'm learning already, I'm also happy that this is causing Nachas Ruach HaBayri. So I'm not totally out of the madrega of Lasos Nachas Ruach HaBayri. I'm not on the level where Nachas Ruach HaBayri will be my major motivation, but it could be a secondary motivation. And therefore, on a secondary level, I get Nachas Ruach HaBayri. So it does pay, that's what he was saying, to learn the entire Messias and Sharim, because on some level, as a secondary level, as a on a smaller level, like as in this pyramid, then we should do all the madrigas. Okay, I'm going to stop for a few minutes, see if anyone has anything to say. Otherwise, then we'll continue. Anyone, any questions?
Rabbi, isn't there a shmuz in the Chiddush Aleph that the Dor HaAflaga was a bigger tain on them, that they didn't have a karz v'tov to Hashem than Warren Gilat HaOnesh? Which shows that even, you know, even us, we should be able to be motivated by Hakar Sitov to Hashem and Achas Rach Lebori than Scharon Onesh.
Yes, but it should be a motivation. I didn't say Onesh. The Reshiva used to say that the main motivation for us would be Schar. I didn't say Einesh. Schar is different than Einesh. Kusin is, you know, Einish is already not the hard motivation too. Schar is a much easier motivation. But there is a Sfara. Okay, but in the Chiddush Aleiv, it said there that was only because the Dor HaMaflaga was right after the Dor HaMabul. So they saw it was blatant. I'm pretty sure they even spoke that out. That by us, it's very hard to feel it because we don't see it because everybody has it. But by the Dor HaAflaga, it was blatant. The nace of the Mabul just happened. So the Noach was just saved and the whole world was destroyed, was very blatant. So when the nace is very blatant, then it's easier to be, even on our level, to serve Hashem through HaKaras HaTov. The Shiva did not say that, but in a non-Dor HaAflaga situation where the nace is not so blatant, then it's not so easy to serve Hashem as HaKaras HaTov alone. But as a combination, we're saying it's possible. Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody else?
Rabbi, like having the clothing question, I mean, there's different madrigas of comfortable clothing. The comfortable clothing is lav dafka shorts and a t-shirt could be, I don't know, a polo shirt and sweatpants, which is much more respectable.
Okay, you have to use your judgment. I'm not, but there is a halacha of davening and learning with respectful. There is such a halacha. Yeah, there is such a thing. Now you say that it could be respectable. Okay, if it's respectable, then you're yaitse, fine. I'm not, you know, obviously I'm not saying I have to be sitting in a where totally and it's going to cause you tremendous bitul Torah, but you know, you don't have to take off your jacket if your hat, you know what I'm saying? But because that's not a lack of disrespect, but there's a certain amount of, you know, he wrote the question, it was written here, was there not appropriate for a base medrash? You know, if it's not appropriate for a base medrash, I don't know. I don't know if that sounds like a lack of a, but okay, a person has to judge. Person has to judge in himself what's, and it maybe depends on the place. I remember, this has nothing to do with anything, but just because it's a cute story, when I was on a seed program in Las Vegas, in Los Angeles, also many years ago. So one of the boys came over to me that we were learning with these high school kids. And, you know, Shia, that was Shia's first year in Los Angeles. And Shia started the law school in Los Angeles, was his first year. He ended his first year, we had a seed program. So one of the fellows came over to us and asked us, how come we don't wear normal shirts? Because in Los Angeles, this boy only saw polar shirts. He never saw button-down shirts. It's the funniest thing. He asked us why we're not wearing normal shirts. What are those things, the buttons? I never saw those. So I don't know, I assume by now they have button shirts in Los Angeles. But it was the funniest thing. I'm not wearing a normal shirt, you know? We don't wear normal shirts. So it depends, I guess, on what society you're in. You know, but in this society, there is a certain respect that you're supposed to have when you're learning. It's supposed to be kavanat Torah. You have to have a certain amount of respect. You're supposed to feel when you're learning that the Shekhinah is next to you. You're not just doing a mitzvah. There's just like when you're davening, you're talking to Hashem. When you're learning, you're supposed to feel like you're learning with Hashem. The Shekhinah is here. So you have to be with respect. This is a certain kavod that determines, that's obligated. I don't know if it applies to other mitzvahs. You know, I'm not sure. But it's brought down by davening and by Torah that there's a mitzvah of hachan. I have here a sefer somewhere that talks about it even. There's a, won't find it in a minute offhand. Someone by the name of Potash in Eretz Yisrael put out a sefer called Hachon Nikras Hashem Elokecha, the name of the sefer. But he says that mitzvah applies both by Talmud Torah and by davening. Okay, anyone else?
Rebbe, how about eating and drinking while learning?
Eating and drinking is brought down the Shulchan Aruch as mutter. Now, I don't know, don't ask me why Queens doesn't allow it. Okay, that's a different question. But it's brought down halacha as mutter only if you're a person who is like the base medrash is your house. So I always have the shaila whether a high school guy who's in the base medrash because his rabbi told them to go in the base medrash and they barely learn a word if they're allowed to eat and drink in the base medrash. Probably not. But don't tell them that. They have other worse things to worry about. But the a person who's sitting living in the base medrash, he's allowed because the base medrash is his house, it's his home. There's a special, it's brought down the Shulchan Aruch that you're allowed, since the base medrash is your house, that's where you spend the majority of your time. So it's not a pigam in COVID if you eat and drink in your house. It's not because of bitul Torah the heter is. The heter is because it's not a lack of COVID, because it's your house. The base medrash is where I live. So it's not a pigam. Person can sleep in a base medrash. It's not a begam in covet. That's where I live. That's my home. So there, you're allowed to eat and drink in the base medrash. I was in a certain yeshiva. I don't know. I guess I shouldn't say this story. It was a certain yeshiva, and there was a certain god I used to go speak to, and he used to like to eat in the base medrash, quite. And there was another gadol there that was very upset about it. So he put it was a big sign on top of his seat, no eating in the base medrash. But he didn't have the first gadol. You know, there's machlokes between the two gadolim. So the Gadol, the high Gadol, basically ignored the sign. The other Gadol put, he taught us, the other Gadol put up the sign, but he doesn't agree. So anyway, so there could be different opinions. I don't know. But the Shulchan Aruch says you're allowed to eat and drink in the Beis Medrash. But it could be the yeshiva. I know in Queens they feel it would make a mess. It would not be that people don't. So that's the difference, Zara. Okay. Okay. And anyone else, or should we continue for a minute, a little bit?
Rebbe said that that Musar doesn't solve all problems. Would the same thing apply by regular Torah?
By what?
By just stamp Torah.
For sure. That, you know, we hold that. That means that it might be everything's in Torah, but we don't know how to get it out. Do you know how to build an airplane from learning Torah? It says in the Gemishnah, hafopa, hafopa, dekulaba. But we're not smart enough to get it out. It's probably in there somewhere. The Grua probably, you know, the Grua could tell the person the whole life from Torah. He said that everything, your whole future is in Torah. Every person, the Gra says that every single person in the world is merumis in the Torah. But we can't find it. So for us, Torah would, but hopefully for a regular person with regular problems, Musar is very good, you know. But to say that Musar is the answer to all problems, you know, that's a little bit dangerous, and that discourages people who need help to get the proper help that they need, and that's a dangerous sentiment. There are people that need help, and they should go get help. And it's the right thing. Okay, let me just go quickly one more or two. This is a real hashkafa question. They wanted to know. I'll do two real hashkafa questions, which are not, they are easy. Why did Rav Shiva give shir in English and not Yiddish? What about Messiah? That's a beautiful, easy question to answer about explaining Messiah. Not easy. Messiah does not mean doing what your Rebbe did. Messiah means doing what your Rebbe would have done if he would be in your situation, right? The fact that they spoke Yiddish is because that was a spoken language in Europe. If now when they get into it's a new situation, so then you have to reconsider. What would my Rebbe have done if he would have been in America? And I remember seeing, saw this many times, I was in Eretz Yisrael, and I saw a big sign, twice this happened to me, or three times really. There was once a big sign that Tnuva is usher to eat Tnuva. It was signed by many, many Gedolim. Tnuva is the main cheese company, milk company in Eretz Yisrael. It was a big sign, usher to eat Tnuva milk, and then it said because it's Chol of Akum, and etc. And it was signed by many Gedolim, except it was dated like 1920 something. Like, okay, in 1920 something, Tnuva was getting their milk from the Arabs. Like, what does that have to do with anything? So the Gedolim in 1920 said, don't eat Tnuva. Like, so what? The Messiah is we don't eat Tnuva. And I tell the people there was in Israel, there used to be only one frum party called Aguda. Rav Shach went ahead, he got upset with Aguda at that point, and he made another frum party called Dega Atara. Now they made peace among them, they sort of became one party again. But for a while, there were two parties. There was Aguda, which was more, it was a little bit of the Babish. That was, I think, part of what the Machlekes was about, that Rav Shach felt that the Babish was controlling Aguda. He didn't agree with certain things that they were doing. And there was a Guda, and there was a new party called Dega Atara. And they were running against each other in the election. And sure enough, there were posters all over Yerushalayim. The Chafetz Chaim said to vote for Aguda. The Abu Chatzer said to vote for Aguda. Chaim Ozer said to vote for Aguda. But that's, you know, that's ridiculous, because there was no Dega Atara when the Chafetz Chaim was alive. So Messiah doesn't mean you do what your Rebbe did. Rav Shiva will always admit that Rav Shiva said Rav David went faster and he's going slower. But he felt that if Rav David was alive, he would have gone slower, because the Talmidim, obviously it's better to go faster if you can go faster. But it's also better to have the same level of Ian. So the Messiah is to go at a certain speed and a certain level of Ian. Now this got no adiris, and we can't go at the same speed and the same level of Ian. So you have to be a gadol to know what would my Rebbe have done? Would he have given up the speed or would he have given up the Ian? The Yeshiva of Paskin, that my father, if he would have been in this door, he would have gone slower. He would have sacrificed the Bekiyas for the sake of the Ian. That takes godless. Somebody else would have said, no, he would have sacrificed the Ian for Bekiyas. Okay, but that was Rashiva's godless. That he knew he understood the Rebbe. So the same godless says that if my Rebbe was in America today, he would go ahead and teach in English, not in Yiddish. I met Rebbe taught in Yiddish. That's because he was in Europe. Everything was in Yiddish. That's because people understood Yiddish. But the American Bachan don't understand Yiddish, so then we don't do Yiddish. Okay, that's I think that's good. Maybe just read one more question, and then I'll open again for what is Shan Elov Yedo Divri Elokim Chayim? What about a Machlokes and Mitzias? That's a very good question. How could you have a Machlokes and Mitzias and have Elov Yedo Divri Elokim Chayim? So the answer, there are many, many answers to this question. This is one of those questions, there are like a million answers. But the normal answer to Eidu V'Eidu Divrei Kim Chayim is that Torah is, even though Hashem gave the Torah at Har Sinai, but Hashem wrote a pasuk in the Torah that says that it's that Lo Sosar, which means that it's up to the Chomet. So if, let's say, I'll give you an example. Let's say there's a Machlekes Rashi in Rabbeinu Tam, how do you wear tefillin? We bask in the Shulchan Aruch like Rashi. Let's say I come up to Shemayim, and I come up and they tell me, you know what? Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam was right, not Rashi. It's definitely possible. So what happens? So you just say, so what? It's Loba Shemayim here. The Shulchan Aruch paskened that we paskened like Rashi. And I did what the Shulchan Aruch paskened. And therefore I got the mitzvah of wearing tefillin. But Kurt, if I would have worn Rabbeinu Tam's tefillin and not Rashi, I wouldn't get the mitzvah. Even if Rabbeinu Tam is what, even if Rabbeinu at Har Sinai, the tefillin that Hashem gave was Rabbeinu Tam, we're only yotzei the mitzvah of tefillin today if we wear Rashi's tefillin. Now, maybe you want to wear both. Okay, there's a chumrah. People said it's an Indian to wear both. That could be a debatable thing. But the Iker tefillin today is Rashi because that's how the Shulchan Aruch paskens. So Pshat and Eidu V'Eidu is that each one, the Gavi himself, he's a gadol, he's paskening. So when he paskens, that's halacha. So like when I was a Rebbe in Eretz Yisrael, so the Ashkenazim would keep 2 days yontif. You know that we know in Eretz Yisrael, but we're B'nai Chutz Yaretz. We keep 2 days yontif, and we don't put on tefillin on the second day yontif, and we say halo with a bracha, and we dive in Shmon Esrei and Shlosh Regadim, and you know, that's what it is. And the Sfardim, who followed Rav Avada Yosef Psak, who says if you live in Eretz Yisrael, if you're in Israel, you only keep 1 day, they would walk around and take pictures of the guys dancing in Simchas Torah. Same yeshiva, same Bachrim. These guys are saying, you know, saying brachas, you know, we're diving with brachas of Hada with a bracha, and saying, you know, Musaf and Shlosh Regadim. And another guy who's in the exact same situation is taking a picture. So who's over in Aveira? Nobody. Because it's Eidu V'Eidu. For a person whose posek is Rav Avadja Yosef, it's Chol. And for a person whose posek is Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's Yontif. So each Godo is a posek Legabe himself. So if Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued, then Legabe Beis Shammai, this is Halacha. And the Gabi Beis Hillel, this is halacha. So they're both right. Because halacha is determined, obviously you have to try your hardest to get what's right, and you have to be a gadol to try your heart to be a, not anyone can paskin, you have to be a gadol. But if you're a gadol and you're paskin, that becomes halacha. Question is, what happens if the machlekes and mitzias? So I once asked this question to Rashiva. Rashiva told me a very nice answer. He says, the mitzias is not relevant in Torah. Because there's no such thing. Torah doesn't, it's not a storybook. We don't really care about the mitzias. It really makes no difference to us what the mitzias was. We only care about the limud haskel that you can learn from the mitzias. So in other words, it really makes no difference whether Rivka was 3 or not. The difference is that there are many shmuzim that we learn out from the fact that Rivka was 3. So if there's a machlekes rishayim, whether Rivka was 3 or 13, let's say, so then it's Eidu V'Eidu. You can learn out the halachas assuming she was 3. and you can learn out the halachas, assuming she was 12, not 13. 12, because both valid days, so therefore both pshatim are valid das Torah. So there's a valid das Torah that she was 3, and then oldish, you know, the psukim that say that she was mushba from what she saw, the avodah zarah in her father's house would be true, even though she left when she was 3. And then the other Dvar Torahs, you can learn out if she was 12. In other words, if we're not interested in the Metzias, we don't care about the Metzias, so then we're only interested in halacha. Metzias only teaches, not no gaya to us to teach you halachas. So Eidu v'Eidu would mean that all the halachas that can be learned from both Metzias are true. One of them got the Metzias wrong. It's almost irrelevant. Right? I just want to end. And then may I open the question, then I think we'll end. The Reshiva once told me, because on this point, the Machlekes and Metzias, that he was together with Rav Freifeld. Freifeld was the Reshiva of, forgot his name, no one will help me later. So he.
Shayoshev. Shayoshev.
Thank you. So he was together with him at some convention somewhere, and he told him, I think he said 3 or 2 jokes that the Chazon Ish told him. That he heard from the Chazon, here, but he heard 2 jokes in the Chazon Ish. I think he said 3, but I don't even remember 2. So he told me over the Chazon Ish's jokes. No, this is the Chazon Ish's jokes. These aren't my jokes. So one of them was on this topic of being, you know, Machlokes and Metzias. So I'll just tell you quickly the first joke, which was not Nogea. First joke was that there's a Machlokes in Tainus, where the Gemara in Tainus brings, not a machlekes, Marin Tainus brings that the Tu B'Av is when the women would go out for Shaduchim. So it says that the women who had Yichus would quote a Pasuk, Ein Isha at a Nebanim, that the purpose of getting married is to have children. Of Yichus, you have better children. The people, the women who had Yofi, so they would quote a Pasuk, Ein Isha at a Yofi. People get married because they want a Yofi. So the Chazon Ish asked Akasha, what would a girl that had both Yofi and Yichus, what did she say? Did she quote the Pasuk of Ein Isha Ed Yofi? Or did she quote the Pasuk Ein Isha Ed Bana? And for the Chazon Ish, she didn't have to say anything because she was married already. That was the first joke. If you like it, I don't know. And the second joke, though, is what we're talking about, that there's that the Chazon Ish asked that we have in Navi, that Eov had tremendous yisurim. I think his children all died. Could be his wife too. I don't remember, probably. But his children all died. He became an ani. He lost all his possessions. And he also became sick, had tremendous physical yisurim. So the Shaida, so the Chazon Ish asked, what was the worst yisurim that ever happened to Eov his whole life? What was the biggest yisurim? So he said the biggest yisurim is a Gemara in Bava Basra. There's a Gemara in Bava Basra, the end of the first parak, that there's a daya that says that Eiv lahoyev el nivra. There's a daya that says that in Metzias, Eiv never happened. It's only a mashal. Moshe Rabbein, whoever wrote the Eiv, I don't remember who wrote Eiv, but he wrote it as a mashal to teach you a Musar lesson, but it never really happened. Other dayas disagree, but that's what this Amora held in Bava Basra. So Rav Chazon Ish said, imagine you went through all that and then someone has the audacity to say you didn't even exist. So that's the biggest yisur. Anyway, but it just brings to the point that we were saying that it really makes to us no difference if Eiv existed or not. Right? There's the Machlokes and the Gemara. Did Eiv exist or did Eiv not exist? Like, makes no nafkamina to me. If Eiv exists or didn't exist, what's the difference? Eiv is written to teach us a lesson in Musar and Hashkafa and Halacha. What's the difference if he existed or not? Does it make a difference if the I think the Rambam Shita is, I think it's the Rambam, when Avram with the Melachim was a dream, did not really happen. It's such a, he's wondering, Shayan, Rambam brings, either it was the Rambam Ebenezer, I forgot, that the Avram gave the Melachim, that he gave them to eat, did not really happen, it was a dream. Because he said, seeing the Melachim is a nevuah, had to be a dream. Now, you know, most people don't learn that way, but it doesn't really make a difference because we learn out from it the Metzias, whatever, it's not relevant, right? So whether something Metzias happened or not has no relevant sauce, because I'm not writing a storybook. I'm not interested in the story. I'm interested in the learning, the lessons. So either existed or not, the lessons are still true no matter what. So it becomes really, therefore it's an Eid of Eid of Dibri Lekim Chaim. The halacha that we learn from both is all the same. Okay, I think I'm going to stop. Does anyone have any questions? I'm going to stop here, I think.
I understand that the Matthias doesn't make a difference, but how is it even possible to have machlokas on that?
Why can't they have a machlokas? They don't. There's a disagreement. There's reasons. There's a reason. People disagree about everything. You can have a disagreement. There's reasons why one person holds one way and the other person says right is the other way, and they have a disagreement.
No, but, logic. He's asking, logically speaking, you can't both be right. It's just. Al Pisecho, it's impossible.
No, they are both right. They're just the opposite. It's not just they can't. They are, because there's no
right. That defies logic.
The only right is halacha. There's no right. We don't care about the story. Even when they argued if he existed or not, they don't care about the story. It's not relevant. No one cares. It's an irrelevancy. What we care about is the halachic ramifications. And let's say there are nafkaminas or halacha. Between whether he existed or not. I don't know what they are, but assuming there are. So both of those halachic ramifications are true, because one gadol held the one halacha, and that becomes das Torah, and shloba shamayimi, and therefore that becomes halacha, and the other gadol held to the other one, so that's halacha. So there's no, the for what they were arguing about, they're both right. Now, the fact that one of them got the Metzius wrong is irrelevant and immaterial. No one cares. No one cares about the what really happened. The Metzius, that would be if we're writing a storybook. You know, so that, you know, you read Yetzias Mitzrayim. You know, you read about Avram Avinu. You know, 99% of Avram Avinu's life is not recorded. It jumps from like when he was, I don't remember if they, you know, from 60 to 90, and you know, and Moshe Rabbeinu, we jumped to from when he yigdal to 80. You know, there's no, the Torah is not a storybook. We don't really care what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu during the years that he ran away from to Midian, and so he came back to Mitzrayim. He came back to Mitzrayim when he was 80. So there were 40 years in the Midbar. So what happened from when he was yigdal was he was at some people. Say 13, some people say less. So what happened from then, from 13 to 80? I don't know, and apparently the Torah didn't tell us because it's not relevant. We're not a storybook. So if there's a machlekes, did Moshe do this or he did that? No one's interested in the mitzias, we're interested in the limud that we can learn out from there. So if somebody says that Moshe married someone in the process, so there's a musar lesson to be learned from that. There is such a sheet that had a different wife during that time. So there's a lesson, you know, Isha Kushis, according, whatever. Okay. Anyway, yeah, anyone else?
Well, Rebbe doesn't mean to say that the Matzias is not important, right? I mean, it's important to know and to believe, obviously, that all these events happen. What I mean is, like, there are certain groups to the far left of Orthodoxy that will say, you know, on a Tzias Mitzrayim never happened, but it doesn't matter because the point is the moral lesson. And that's like, you know.
I'm not saying it didn't happen. Obviously, no one says it didn't happen, so it didn't happen. There's no machlekes. But if there's a machlekes, if it happened, then we don't, then it, in a certain sense, it's not really, in that machlekes, the most important thing is the lesson to be learned out, the halachas that are to be learned out. I wouldn't say the moral lesson. You see, that's when you're making down, you know, that the person says the moral lesson, they say to you, you know, that's a very dangerous word. Because then you're saying that you don't have to keep halacha and this, only care about the moral lesson. But there's halachas to be learned. Some of the halachas are not necessarily moral lessons. We don't say halachas are gzeiros hakasos. We don't understand them, right? We have a mitzvah of eating matzah. We don't understand it. I don't call that a moral lesson. You're only learning out, you see, it's been trying for the moral lessons, and you don't have to eat matzah. I always say it, the nicest sukkah I ever saw in my life, I was at a simcha, you know, in a hall, and they had a sukkah. It was gorgeous. It was inside the building, because why would you build a beautiful sukkah outside and might get ruined, and have beautiful schach? It was a beautiful sukkah decoration, except, of course, it was totally puzzle. But if you're moral, if you care about the moral, you know, that's what you're interested in. But, you know, so I wouldn't say the moral, but the halachas is what counts. What Shem's direction, how we're supposed to live our lives. One of the halachas is Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. So obviously you have to believe that Mitzrayim existed. But I don't know about the Eiv. There's no Zecher Yetzias Eiv. So I don't know if it makes a difference.
It's not going to help you with Emunah if you don't believe that happened. I mean,
what?
Believe it's not going to help you, you know, with your Emunah, all the Makos and everything, if you don't, you know,
no,
firmly believe that it happened.
So Mitzrayim, you know, it says it's supposed to be, you have to believe it. That's the mitzvah to believe it. So obviously you have to believe it. But the other things where they have a machlokes, you're not going to have a machlokes with Mitzrayim existed or not. But the things where you have a machlokes and mitzias, where there are cases and they were, they have machlokes and mitzias. So those mitzias do not, the mitzias don't make a difference. And the mitzias are only to teach you halachas. And those halachas, we are edo v'edo.
So Rebbe, about those halachos, same way with any other machlokes, we always pass in like one side. How do we know when you have this machlokes that they decided, each one decided to say that it was a certain mitzias because they felt certain halacha in Midos or Das Torah is supposed to be learned out. How do we know which way to paskin?
Okay, so you have to see how we paskin. Okay, enachinami, you have to check how we paskin. Sometimes we paskin one way and sometimes we paskin like both. You know, there could be, you know, it could be that there's no machleika. I didn't say that the reason why they argued is because they started with, because they had different limits. I said the other way around. They had their machleikas and the mitzias. And each mitzias teaches you different limudim. And there's no reason to assume that one person would disagree with the other ones in his limudim. So we've been made that we would probably paskin like both, because we don't know that they're arguing on the limudim.
Why would they have a machlokas and the mitzias if it's not?
They don't have machlokas and mitzias because they had different reasons why one person felt the mitzias was this way. Anytime there's a machlokas, there's different reasons why people think different things. Just like there's machlokas and shad and taisis. The machlokas and shad and taisis between the Marsha and the Rekiv Eger. Who was right? Go ask Tavis who was right. It doesn't make a difference. You get, if let's say you take a piece of Gemara, and the Gemara is the Machlekes in the Gemara, and Taisus argued with Rashi and Shan the Gemara, and the Marsha argued with Rekiv Eger and Shan and Taisus, and I work on Rekiv Eger and Shan and Taisus, and when I'm going to go up to Shammai, and they're going to tell me that Rashi was right, or they're going to tell me that the Plain Yeshua was right, so you know, it makes no difference. Once Rekiv Eger said that's Shan and Taisus, then that becomes Tyra. Then it gets the Kedusha Satyra. That's part of the Loba Shamayim He. So therefore it's Eidu V'Eidu. The Plain Yeshua is Eidu V'Eidu and Rekiv Eger is Eidu V'Eidu because it's all Tyra. It all gets the Kedusha Satyra. And Halacha, if there's Halachic Nafkaminas, very often we pass in like both. Imam Chumrah, whatever. You know, you have to know Klolei Apsak. Okay, I think I'm going to end. I'm sorry.